WOO Portland.
Hey, bluegrass lovers! Tune in Saturday, March 13th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for a very special quarantine version of the Bluegrass Marathon from your friends at Music from the True Vine.
This year's marathon will feature homespun, socially distanced recordings from Jack Straw,
Left Coast Country,
John Cale and Annie Stanenitz,
Caleb Clowder and Reeve Wilms,
Doug Sammons and Jeff Smith,
Farmstrong,
and many, many more.
Don't miss this unique radio event to catch up with your friends and neighbors, playing music, and sharing stories from the lockdown.
Again, tune in to KBOO Saturday, March 13th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for the Bluegrass Marathon.
Don't miss it.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational discussion about race with independent journalists from the Pacific Northwest. From Grassroots News Northwest, I'm your host and moderator, Lenita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
Come on.
Let's talk about race. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all of the things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about
race.
Let's talk about
race.
Let's talk about
race.
Welcome to another edition of Let's Talk About Race. This is a happy show. The evolution of Vice President Kamala Harris.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies. Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
That I will well and faithfully discharge.
That I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
The duties of the office upon which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
We wanted to recalibrate this show with a celebration of music and information. We want to focus on her evolution from a senator to a presidential candidate to a VP pick and now Madam Vice President. Please do enjoy a celebration of Kamala Harris with music and information.
Vice President, I'm speaking.
Well, wait.
I'm speaking.
The important news is the truth.
Vice President, I'm speaking.
Well, wait.
I'm speaking.
The important news is the truth.
The Vice President, I'm speaking.
Well, wait.
I'm speaking.
When I agreed to serve as President Obama's running mate, he asked me a number of questions, as I've asked Kamala. But the most important was, he said to me, he asked me what I wanted, most importantly. I told him I wanted to be the last person in the room before he made the important decisions. That's what I asked Kamala. I asked Kamala to be the last voice in the room, to always tell me the truth, which she will, challenge my assumptions if she disagrees, ask the hard questions, because that's the way we make the best decisions for the American people. I got a chance to spend some time at my home today with Kamala and Doug. And I want to thank them, and thank them publicly for agreeing to join and take this journey with Jill and me. Doug, you're going to have to learn what it means to be a barrier breaker yourself in this job you're about to take on. America's first, second gentleman. And although they're not with us here today, I want to thank Ellen Cole as well. I had a chance to speak to Doug's mom and dad and to Ellen Cole. And we're going to get our kids together to let them know what's coming. My grandchildren are about the age of their children. I got to speak to them. My campaign has always been a family affair, every campaign I've run. So I've got some news for you. You're all honorary Bidens. And here's the best part. Kamala, you've been an honorary Biden for quite some time. You know, I came first to know who Kamala was through our son, Beau Biden. They were friends. They served as attorneys general at the same time. They took on the same big fights together. Kamala in California, Beau here in Delaware. Big fights that helped change the entire country. I know how much Beau respected Kamala and her work, and that mattered a lot to me, to be honest with you, as I made this decision. So now, we need to get to work, pulling this nation out of these crises we find ourselves in.
Let's talk about it. Althea, KBOO's news director, what do you think it means to have her on the ticket? And then I want all the panelists to answer that, please.
Sure. Well, I think there's a few main considerations that I would imagine the Biden campaign was thinking about in selecting Kamala Harris. Obviously, race definitely factored in, especially considering the climate around protesting, racial justice and police brutality in this present moment. Although I expect we will be talking about, you know, some of the mixed past that Kamala Harris has had in that regard. But another thing to consider is her role in pushing back against President Trump throughout his presidency thus far. Talking to Jeff Sessions when he was getting confirmed, she got a lot of notoriety for that.
Attorney General Sessions, you have several times this afternoon prefaced your responses by saying, to the best of your recollection. Just on the first page of your three pages of written testimony, you wrote, nor do I recall, do not have recollection, do not remember it. So my question is, for any of your testimony today, did you refresh your memory with any written documents, be they your calendar, written correspondence, emails, notes of any sort?
I attempted to refresh my recollection, but so much of this is in a wholesale campaign of extraordinary nature that you're moving so fast that you don't keep notes. You meet people. I didn't keep notes of my conversation with the Russian ambassador at the Republican convention.
Sir, I'd like to just talk about what you did.
You know, I'm just saying I didn't keep notes on most of these things, and there's nothing for me.
Will you provide this committee with the notes that you did maintain?
As appropriate, I will supply the committee with documents.
Can you please tell me what you mean when you say appropriate?
I would have to consult with lawyers in the department who know the proper procedure before disclosing documents that are held within the Department of Justice.
Attorney General,
I'm not
Sessions.
Able to make that opinion today.
Sir, I'm sure you prepared for this hearing today, and most of the questions that have been presented to you were predictable. So my question to you is, did you then review with the lawyers of your department, if you as the top lawyer are unaware, what the law is regarding what you can share with us and what you cannot share with us, what is privileged and what is not privileged?
We discussed the basic parameters of testimony. I frankly have not discussed documentary disclosure rules.
Will you make a commitment to this committee that you will share any written correspondence, be they your calendars, records, notes, emails, or anything that has been reduced at any point in time in writing to this committee, where legally you actually have an obligation to do so?
I'll commit to reviewing the rules of the department, and as and when that issue is raised, to respond appropriately.
Did you have any communications with Russian officials for any reason during the campaign that have not been disclosed in public or to this committee?
I don't recall it, but I have to tell you, I cannot testify to what was said as we were standing at the Republican convention before the podium where I spoke.
My question is only as it relates to your knowledge.
I don't have a detailed memory of that.
Okay, as it relates to your knowledge. Did you have any communication with any Russian businessmen or any Russian nationals?
I don't believe I had any conversation with Russian businessmen or Russian nationals.
Are you aware of
Although
any communications?
A lot of people were at the convention. It's conceivable that somebody
sir,
came
sir,
up
I have
to me.
Just a few.
Well, you let me qualify it. If I don't qualify it, you'll accuse me of lying. So I need to be correct as best I can.
I do want you to be honest.
And I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
Are you aware of any communications with other Trump campaign officials and associates that they had with Russian officials or any Russian nationals?
I don't recall that.
And are you aware of
At any, this moment.
Are you aware of any communications with any Trump officials, or did you have any communications with any officials about Russia or Russian interests in the United States before January 20th?
No, I may have had some conversations, and I think I did, with the general strategic concept of the possibility of whether or not Russia and the United States could get on a more harmonious relationship and move off the hostility. The Soviet Union did, in fact, collapse. It's really a tragic strategic event that we're not able to get along better than we are today.
Before being sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
Would you repeat that?
Before you were sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
I did not submit memoranda. I did not make formal presentations.
Did you ever communicate with him in writing?
I don't believe so.
And you referred to a longstanding DOJ policy. Can you tell us what policy it is you're talking about?
Well, I think most cabinet people, as the witnesses you had before you earlier, those individuals declined to comment because we're all about conversations with the president.
Sir, I'm just asking you about the DOJ policy you referred to.
A policy that goes beyond just the attorney general.
Is that policy in writing somewhere?
I think so.
So did you not consult it before you came before this committee, knowing we would ask you questions about
it? Well, we talked about it. The policy is
did
based...
Did you ask that it would be shown to you?
The policy is based on the principle that the president...
Sir, I'm not asking about the principle. I'm asking when you,
well,
you would be asked
the
these
question.
Questions and you would rely on that policy.
Chairman,
did you not ask your staff to show you the policy that would be the basis for your refusing to answer the
Chairman,
majority of questions that have been asked
should be allowed
of you?
To answer the question.
Senators will allow the chair to control the hearing. Senator Harris, let him answer.
Please do. Thank you.
We talked about it, and we talked about the real principle that's at stake. It's one that I have some appreciation for, as having spent 15 years in the Department of Justice, 12 as United States Attorney, and that principle is that the Constitution provides the head of the executive branch certain privileges. And that members, one of them is confidentiality of communications. And it is improper for agents of any department of any departments in the executive branch to waive that privilege without a clear approval
Chairman,
of the president.
I have asked.
And that's the situation
Mr.
we're in.
For a yes or no, did you ask?
So
your
the
staff
answer is yes, I consulted.
Senator, did you ask your staff
Senator
to see
Stein's
the policy?
Expired.
Apparently
Senator
not.
Cornyn.
Kamala, it's someone named Kamala. And truly, since I've begun to learn all she's done, I see she deserves that spot. And also, I learned it's no, not Kamala. So think of it like Kamala, because Kamala, she's good for America. And popular as she was, well, now Kamala's popularity will grow.
Kamala has been, you know, in the Senate pushing for these necessary reforms and actions that the federal government can take to ease that stress on everyday Americans. And Kamala Harris is this sort of steady force with politics similar enough to Biden's that should the unthinkable happen, you have your next person in line set up in such a way as to align. And also to kind of fend off the point from the right, sort of a shoehorned secret Trojan horse progressive candidate snuck in under Biden in order to give the left what they want, which is kind of the narrative that the Trump campaign has been pushing so far about the choice to run with Kamala Harris.
Professor Johnson.
Well, I have ambivalent feelings. I am excited that we have a woman, a person of color, that this is a historical moment. I was always a little uncomfortable with the discussion about it needs to be a woman of color. And I understand the importance of that. But when you're the candidate, then you want to be hired because you are the most qualified person for the job, not because you are a statistic or a demographic. So I think that any candidate that gets hired when that is kind of what surrounds them, then it's kind of easy to say, well, they just hired her because she was a person of color, ignoring all of the qualifications.
To her supporters, Harris was a force for change.
We're talking 2004, 2005, 2006, and I have the elected DA, young black woman, telling me create a program where we get 300 to 400 or 500 young people who the state says to put in jail for 20 years for 5 grams of crack, get them jobs.
Scared and facing a felony conviction for selling cocaine. But the single mother caught a break when she was diverted to back on track.
It's about, yeah, you did commit a crime, accept it, own up to it, and then let's talk about what we can do to change the circumstances going forward.
And I understand that his top two were Susan Rice and Kamala Harris, and that he really struggled with making the decision, but thought that Harris was the better pick because she does have the campaign and political experience.
Racial justice is on the ballot in 2020.
There is a hunger for black female leadership. She embodies all the strength that you hope to see in a strong female leader. There's just a lot of excitement around her nomination. Kamala Harris is a freshman senator from California. She has a long record as a prosecutor. She used those prosecutorial skills to go after Trump administration officials during Senate congressional hearings. And that's how she really sort of built a national profile for herself.
I think you've made it clear that you've not looked at the evidence. We can move on. I think you've made it clear, sir, that you've not looked at the evidence, and we can move on.
I do want you to be on.
I'm not able to. Be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
Have you had any conversation about Robert Mueller or his investigation with anyone at that firm? Yes or no?
Well, is there a person you're talking about?
I'm asking you a very direct question. Yes or no?
Kamala Harris is the daughter of immigrants. Her mother was from India. Her father was from Jamaica, which makes her a historic choice. She is both the first black woman to be on a presidential ticket and the first Asian American to be on a presidential ticket.
Raw from the fact that in the history of our country, black people have been treated as less than human.
Democrats will tell you time and again, black women are the foundation of the party. They are the bedrock constituency in the Democratic Party. And now they finally have someone on the ticket that represents the role they play in the party.
When the press questioned Donald Trump on the selection, he actually didn't realize or didn't understand that they had already run a political ad casting Harris as phony. And he hadn't really apparently seen the ad, or he forgot about it. But in his press interview, I thought it was important to note all the issues he raised with Harris.
As far as Kamala is concerned, she's a big tax raiser. She's a big slasher of funds for our military. And she's got a lot of difficult things that she's going to have to explain.
She wants to raise taxes. She wants to get rid of your Second Amendment. No guns for protection, no nothing. She's very strong in the Second Amendment, getting rid of it. And very bad to the military. She wants to cut the military. She wants to cut spending for the military and the vets.
I thought she was the meanest, the most horrible, most disrespectful of anybody in the U.S. Senate. She's also known, from what I understand, as being just about the most liberal person in the U.S. Senate. And again, she's not a person that's liked. I think people will fall out of love with her very quickly, very quickly. She campaigned very hard, and every time people heard her open her mouth, she went down. She dropped like a rock. I didn't. When I ran against 17 people, mostly governors and senators, some others. Ben Carson was very strong, very good. A couple of others, but mostly governors, mostly senators. And I ran, and I went up. She ran, and she went down to rock bottom. I don't think she ever got to run her first, to take a vote in her first.
He said that she's going to slash the military. She's going to raise taxes. She's against fracking. She wants socialized medicine, and that she did poorly in the primaries, and that she's a nasty person because she didn't treat Kavanaugh well. But overall, I think I'm energized by Biden's potential here. I understand that in 24 hours, they raised $26 million, which is the highest campaign increase they've experienced. So I think that says something about the excitement behind this election.
Hey, it's Kamala Harris, and this is my Mood Mix. Song that has always made me dance. Check the Rhyme, A Tribe Called Quest. You know I'm talking about Fife. A song from my favorite movie, Purple Rain by Prince, and Shallow by Lady Gaga. Okay, so it's supposed to be my favorite song at a cookout, but you don't play just one song at a cookout. You play a lot of songs at a cookout, and I highly recommend Lemonade by Beyoncé. A song that lifts my spirits always, Oh Happy Day by the Edwin Hawkins Choir. A song that has to be played loud because you have to hear the bass. The Sun Is Shining by Bob Marley and the Wailers. Right? The sun is shining and the rain. A song that reminds me of Howard University, my alma mater, the Mecca, the real HU. Push It by Salt and Pepper. Because it was a real hit song when I was there. Favorite song from my childhood, Young, Gifted, and Black by Aretha Franklin. A song that makes me think of my birthplace, Oakland. Anything by Too Short. Too Short! A song by one of my favorite rappers from California would be Humble by Kendrick Lamar. I work out in the morning, every morning, and folks wanted to know a song I listen to while working out. I don't. I watch Morning Joe. A presidential song for anyone. One Nation Under a Groove by Funkadelic. One nation under a groove, getting down just for the funk of it. Can I get it on the... Wow! I hope you guys enjoyed my Mood Mix. More to come. Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational journalistic roundtable focusing on the issue of race. From Grassroots News, I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
Nia Gray, our faith reporter.
Well, thank you. So I personally was super excited. I posted it all over work, all over Facebook, brought it up in my Bible study today. Like anybody who has been up previous conversation with me in the last couple of weeks on my phone, I've sent them a text and it's just Kamala Harris, exclamation point. And it's interesting because when I posted it to our all sales messenger service, as well as we have a Black professional affinity group. A Indian product developer who's newer to my company sent me a private email, and she's excited because she's Indian from India, and she's so happy that there's representation since Kamala's mom is an Indian woman.
Welcome back. Even as the Indian origin Kamala Harris took oath as the 49th vice president and the first woman vice president of the United States of America, the White House press secretary has called it as a boost to the nation's bilateral ties with India. Joining us on the phone line is our senior executive editor, Abhishek Kapoor, for more on this. Because Abhishek, the United States has hailed a long bipartisan and successful relationship with India and has also said that the Indian-American Kamala Harris as vice president will further cement the ties between the two nations.
Oh, you are right. It's a big commentary on the Indian diaspora around the world in terms of how they succeed and truly embed themselves in new cultures and nations. What is more important is, Amita, that there is a bipartisan support, as you rightly mentioned, so far as Indo-US relationship and its growth trajectory is concerned. So while we understand that Indo-Pacific became the buzzword of the Trump administration's foreign policy, the fact of the matter is India is the pivot of Asia. That policy actually took shape during the Obama administration, and you know how during the George W.'s administration the nuclear deal was signed. So there is a continuity and upward trajectory insofar as all aspects of this very strategic partnership between India and the United States is concerned, and it's durable beyond political ideologies, and that's why we have seen, be it Manmohan Singh here or Prime Minister Narendra Modi now, or on the side of the United States, George W. Bush or Barack Obama, or even Trump with his unpredictabilities, the India-US partnership has gained strength from strength, and it's going to continue to be so in all aspects, including defense, strategic issues, trade, and political coordination between each other. I mean, remember, Trump invited India Prime Minister Modi to G7, though it was held virtually last year. And this year we are seeing United Kingdom continuing with that decision. So I think it's going to have a cascading effect on other relationships that India has in terms of the India-US partnership really guiding that aspect of India's global relationships in time to come. But what is important is Joe Biden has made all the right noises insofar as India-US partnership is concerned, and that and is set to continue.
So that was interesting. I did not expect to get that response. So I said, yay, you know, it's a win for all of us. As I watched the news and they're out in the street interviewing people, I saw a young African-American single mom who loves that she was raised by a single mom. So her parents divorced when she was younger. So there's just lots of different ways that women and just people in this country can relate to her, that she's a very relatable candidate and much more qualified than Sarah Palin. I mean, when Sarah Palin was announced as the VP for the Republican Party years ago, I'm sure there were a lot of people like, why? I mean, is she really qualified for that? You know, Black women have been the backbone of the Democratic Party for generations. We have been out there, grassroots efforts, voting efforts, organizers, activists. It's about time that we picked a Black woman to be in leadership for the Democratic Party, because they have benefited a lot from our time, resources, and efforts.
The Vice President, I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
The important is you said the truth.
The Vice President, I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
The important is you said the truth.
The Vice President, I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
The important is you said the truth.
The Vice President, I'm speaking. I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational journalistic roundtable focusing on the issue of race. From Grassroot News, I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
You know, this is the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote. And although Black women were not granted that right 100 years ago, it wasn't until more than 40 years later, the fact that Kamala Harris is the candidate for Vice President of the United States is very significant for many reasons. I think of, you know, just the picture of it for girls of color to see that a woman of color can be nominated to run for the second highest office in the United States is significant.
To be named on the Democratic ticket.
That's Kamala Harris.
She's like a leader to all girls.
The first time I heard that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris won, this was my same reaction.
It's a huge historical moment.
I'm really glad that she's a woman.
Someone who's a woman now.
Woohoo! She's so inspiring.
She's gonna make a bigger impact on the general people because they see themselves in her.
It's insane because, you know, growing up, you always have like role models and people you want to like take after. And in the past, there hasn't been that female representation as far as presidents or vice presidents go. And for these kids to grow up and be like, that could be me someday, it's just such a it's so amazing to just have that.
This is actually kind of wholesome.
She's a real inspiration to little kids all over the world, especially because she's the first African-American and South Asian woman, and woman, period, to be the vice president.
It's amazing how us women can do a lot.
The fact that Senator Harris is a Black American whose mother is from India is significant in that it shows that for people who have been on the outside for so long that they have a voice is significant. People have said over and over that Black women are the backbone of the Democratic Party. Kamala Harris is a Black woman is significant. The fact that for the first time we have a candidate for one of the two highest offices in the United States who is a graduate from a historically Black college, Howard University, I think is significant.
I know everyone, all the alumni are extremely excited.
Former Howard classmate Lita Rosario recruited Kamala Harris for the university's debate team.
We consider ourselves the Mecca of Black education in America. And, you know, I think we're going to be able to take that title and expand it just from Black America to all of America with Thurgood Marshall and now Kamala Harris.
Harris is likely to find significant support through her membership in Alpha Kappa Alpha, a national Greek letter sorority that was founded on Howard's campus in 1908.
Over 300,000 women nationally. I mean, that's power. That's a power base for sure.
Senator Harris's historic accomplishments and the significance of this day are being watched closely by current student leaders at Howard, especially women.
A lot of times, like, we're told, okay, like, no, you're too ambitious. No, you just need to, you know, fall back. Knowing that somebody didn't listen to that and they're at the places that they're at, I don't, like, it's just, it's too much to process, honestly.
The fact that for the first time we have a woman, a candidate for the vice presidency, who is a member of a Black sorority, I think is significant. Now, people can argue around politics and stuff like that, but for the mere symbolism, I think is significant. And the fact that she will help decide national policies, I think, is significant.
Do you think it matters that she's married to a white man? And how do you think the Black community, so far that's not been brought up. But I think if Obama had been married to a white female, he might not have gotten that far. in his presidential quest. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I don't think it's the fact. Yeah, I think it's 2020 now that we're living in a multiracial, multicultural society, and the fact that Kamala Harris is a daughter of immigrants from India and from Jamaica. The fact that she is married to a white man, I think it speaks volumes to who we are as a country now, as opposed to the image that Donald Trump and Mike Spence are trying to portray about where America should be. She symbolizes where America is and where the United States is going, while Donald Trump and Mike Spence are trying to take us back to a place that many people don't want to go back to.
Okay, I can speak to some aspects of it. First, I want to question the question, Lenita, and you know, inquire as to why when we're talking about a female candidate that the spouse has such a level of importance as to like influence your perception of a female candidate. And I think it's an interesting question to ask, and I do want to address it, but I want to push back on the idea because I think that it is really ingrained to look at women in power through the lens of how is she as a wife? How is she as a mom? And thinking about those traditional gender roles. One thing I will say is in thinking about interracial relationships, I mean, it's going to depend on the group. Right. But what comes to mind for me is this sort of like coded mentality of whiteness being what's palatable. I think about that, or I've seen it come up, I should say, in the way that like oftentimes mixed children are praised, like, oh, mixed children are so beautiful. It's like, well, sure, but what has you put them a step above, right? Is it the incorporation of whiteness? And I think it's important to recognize that impulse. But I can't say that I know exactly how that would play out in terms of her husband. Black excellence, it is irrelevant. Why you mash it with a white man? Better love while you still can. Worry less about her husband and more about what her heart stands. Because representation is what we need. And you ain't gonna sit here and tell me that the first black woman VP ain't what little black girls need to see. Check your racism, your sexism, your bigotry at the door. All your insolence and your ignorance, we ain't trying to hear it no more. Kamala Harris is here to stay. Despite all the poison you try to spray. If black is king, she is a queen, guaranteed. She rides anyway. Kamala, ooh, I'm so lit, I don't know what I'ma do. Now that she running with Biden, I'm vibing. You mad and you wag, a black woman made you. She reppin' AKs, I'm reppin' DST, but we are all the same, call it Greek unity. She is my sister and I am her pusher. If it ain't black excellence, it is irrelevant. It's Kamala, not Kamala. Put some respect on her name. Past time to stop dissing black women. We be fighting. Professor Johnson.
Yes, I think that's a tough question. And I don't think that it will affect people's vote. I don't think that it will be a top of mind consideration for voters in this election. But you also, one part of the question you asked, would people have voted differently if Barack Obama's wife had been white? And that one gives me a little bit of pause. Just because I think there's this stereotype that exists around black men that are married to white women that doesn't exist for black women that are married to white men. So personally, I think people voted for Barack Obama. They got a huge bonus with Michelle Obama being the great first lady that she was. I think that the idea of having a black president would not have been diminished based on the race of his wife.
So I agree with Althea that there are different groups of people that might have their opinions on this, but it is interesting that here we are again. We have a woman whether she's a CEO or a VP candidate, that's like, well, what about her husband? What's happening with that? And so I think that's really, really interesting. I think more so than being married to a white man, I think that African-American men might have a bigger issue voting because she was a former district attorney and they are a prosecutor, and they may have the impression that she's just locking up brothers, targeting, you know, black men unnecessarily, that they might have some issues with that. In fact, I found an article that Luke Campbell, the former Two Live Crew frontman, really had an issue with her. So I think you can't please everyone. I read a quote from her that says whether she's married to somebody black or white, she wakes up as a black woman, spends her day as a black woman, and goes to bed as a black woman.
It's not just about the VP for me. It's about the MVP. You know, most vice presidential. And to me, it's obvious.
Senator Harris, I'm not embarrassed. Pronounce it right, cause she's coming up. She's bringing sex and plastic glass. Martin Bay Queen, make the ticket complete. Sweet, freaking out Mikey P.
If you are just joining us, you're listening to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational journalistic roundtable focusing on the issue of race. From Grassroots News, I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
To the woman most responsible for my presence here today, my mother, Shyamala Gopalan Harris, who is always in our hearts. When she came here from India at the age of 19, she maybe didn't quite imagine this moment, but she believed so deeply in an America where a moment like this is possible. And so I am thinking about her and about the generations of women, black women, Asian, white, Latina, Native American women, who throughout our nation's history have paved the way for this moment. Women who fought and sacrificed so much for equality and liberty and justice for all, including the black women who are often too often overlooked, but so often prove they are the backbone of our democracy. All the women who have worked to secure and protect the right to vote for over a century, 100 years ago with the 19th Amendment, 55 years ago with the Voting Rights Act, and continued the fight for their fundamental right to vote and be heard. I reflect on their struggle, their determination, and the strength of their vision to see what can be unburdened by what has been. And I stand on their shoulders.
When Harris won California's Senate seat in 2017, she used her prosecutor skills to ask tough pointed questions in Washington.
Have you had any conversation about
Robert Mueller or his investigation with anyone at that firm? Yes or no?
Well, is there a person you're talking about?
I'm asking you a very direct question, yes or no.
Moments like these got the most attention while she was running for the Democratic nomination. Among the most memorable was this one on the debate stage as she took on Joe Biden.
Who also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
Harris never broke into the top tier of candidates, dropping out weeks before the first primary.
So, to you, my supporters, my dear supporters, it is with deep regret, but also with deep gratitude, that I am suspending our campaign today.
But on August 11th, she became the first Black woman and Asian American to run for vice president, on the same ticket as the candidate she fiercely debated.
This is a fight that is for the soul of our country, that is born out of love of country, and this is a fight we will win.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational journalistic roundtable focusing on the issue of race. From Grassroot News, I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
What didn't we talk about today, Cecil?
I don't think we talked about, in terms of Kamala Harris, in terms of policy, in terms of her evolution, political evolution. Many people have talked about her career as a district attorney and whether or not she was progressive enough. But also we need to talk about the evolution that has taken place in her political philosophy. And again, I think the push that we see in recent months of the Black Lives Matters movement, how that has pushed her to a more progressive position on many things. So we'll see what the future has for her and for our country because of the push of activists on the ground level and the influence that has on those in higher positions.
Diane mentioned this a little bit in thinking about Kamala Harris as she's had all of these firsts in her career. And she's also expressed that she doesn't really like being considered a first. But one first that she isn't technically is the first Black woman to run for president. The first was Shirley Chisholm in 1972.
What made you decide to do this, to run for president of the United States?
What made me decide was that I felt that the time had come when a Black person or a female person could and should be president of these United States of America, not only white males. And I decided somebody had to get it started.
Were you the first African-American?
Yes, yes.
Not only the first African-American woman, but the first African-American run for president of the United States.
That's right.
Yes.
And what I did, I felt that just about 2 years before, 4 years before, I had gone to the Congress as the first Black person to be elected to the Congress. And I had gone on a number of speaking engagements through the country. And there was a fantastic development for me as an individual. And people were encouraging me, Ms. Chisholm, you should run. You should run because you're a woman. We never had a woman president. You're Black. We never had a Black person for president. You speak Spanish. You have a lot of things, and you have a knowledge of the issues. Run! And that's what motivated me to make the bid. Yes, spurred me on. But I knew I would be in trouble because the moment that the announcement was made that I was going to make a bid for the presidency, all hell broke loose. All hell broke loose from Black men, white men, Puerto Rican men. Hell broke loose.
Yes.
See, and I kind of expected it. I expected it.
During that time when you ran for the president, it must have been absolutely chaotic.
Oh, it was.
And the media, did you think that the media treated you properly?
They overall? They did not treat me properly at all, particularly in the South. But the one thing in the South that was very strange was George Wallace.
Oh, yes.
George Wallace, for some strange, unknown reason, he liked me. And when we were running in the Floridian primary, John Lindsay, who was the mayor of New York, begged me to pull back because I was beating him in Florida. And I would not pull back. I said, no, this is my time.
Oh, that is such a surprise. Yes. That she would not do that. Yes.
And George Wallace came down to Florida, and he went all over Florida, and he said to the people, if y'all can't vote for me, don't vote for those oval-headed lizards. Vote for Shirley Chisholm. And that crashed my vote because they thought I was in league with him to get votes. That's what killed me in Florida.
Oh.
You see, because he came out for me if people couldn't vote for him.
Yes.
So they said, well, I guess Shirley Chisholm made some kind of agreement with George Wallace.
Yes, behind the scenes.
Yes, that's right.
And then, of course, when he was shot, yes, you visited him, and I understand that.
Oh, when I visited him and he was shot, I almost lost my seat. I went to the hospital to visit him. And all of us who were running for president at that time, Jackson and Wilbur Mills, and John Lindsay, because there were 13 of us who were out there in the race in 1972. And I went to see him. Oh my gosh. I knew that I was going to be thrown out of office. The people in my district came down on me like anything. And I had two big public forums. And I said, this is not the way we do it. And I had to lecture to them and let them know that I wouldn't want this to happen to anybody. So I kind of brought them along. But that was one time that I almost lost my seat, even though I was still holding it, because I went to visit George Wallace. And when I went to visit George Wallace, he was in the bed. I'll never forget this. All the tubes were coming through his nostrils, his throat, and he was lying in the bed. He was propped up, and I was coming through the door, and he said, Shirley Chisholm, what you doing here? You shouldn't be here. I said, I'm here because you are ill, and you are ill for a good reason. God guides us. And he looked up, and I couldn't stay long because he was very ill, and the doctors told me, Congresswoman, you have to leave him. And he held on to my hand so tightly, he didn't want me to go. But the platform is things that I was talking to you earlier about.
Education,
better housing, paying attention to our health problems, the health problems that there's always the same thing.
Always the same issues.
Always the same. So it's an amazing thing that it doesn't change.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Welfare too,
yes,
I suppose.
Yes, yes.
Wow. It is awful, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
However, there were some black men who supported you.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I understand the Ron Dellums, mm-hmm, and Perrin Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know, there were some very conscientious men in
yes,
this
there,
group.
Yes, there were some very conscientious. And these conscientious men, Ron Dellums and Perrin Mitchell, they were trying to talk to their brothers, yes, and say, give her a chance. She has ability. She has talent. Shirley's no dummy. And they almost just told him, get lost.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But wonderful that they did that, despite
yes.
the fact that most of their peers did not.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, mm-hmm. Hooray to them. What went through your mind as your name went into the nomination at the 1972 Democratic National Convention? Just when you heard your name.
Well, you know, I was embarrassed. You know, I don't know what it was. But George Wallace's delegates, they jumped out of their seats and they swung me. Go, Shirley, go. You know, I couldn't understand this. That the Southerners, particularly from the state of Alabama, because the state of Alabama is seated right down front at the convention center. And they almost went wild when I... And all the people from New York and Pennsylvania, they were like, what's going on here? Shirley supporting them. You know, I couldn't control it. For some reason, I'll never be able, I would like to understand this, why the state of Alabama led by George Wallace at that time, had good feelings, good vibes about me. She's very, very strange.
That is.
Yeah, very strange.
You don't think it was a setup in any way, do you?
No,
to dilute your
I don't think
power.
So. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was.
So we didn't get to talk about the history that Black women have had in presidential politics.
Good point. Our faith reporter, Nia Gray. What didn't we talk about?
We didn't talk about what's happening in states where kids have gone back to school and there are new outbreaks. I think it's 100,000 children who have been infected with coronavirus since earlier this month, whether that's people going on vacation or kids going back to school. So they're having to shut down schools, but the response to it has been pretty enlightening. Just people still don't believe that a mask can help them. And then also the budget deficit hit $2.8 trillion in just 10 months. So on track to be double the all-time record.
Good evening. It is my honor to be here, to stand on the shoulders of those who came before, to speak tonight as your vice president. In many ways, this moment embodies our character as a nation. It demonstrates who we are. Even in dark times, we not only dream, we do. We not only see what has been, we see what can be. We shoot for the moon, and then we plant our flag on it. We are bold, fearless, and ambitious. We are undaunted in our belief that we shall overcome, that we will rise up. This is American aspiration. In the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln saw a better future and built it with land-grant colleges and the Transcontinental Railroad. In the middle of the Civil Rights Movement, Dr. King fought for racial justice and economic justice. American aspiration is what drove the women of this nation throughout history to demand equal rights, and the authors of the Bill of Rights to claim freedoms that had rarely been written down before. A great experiment takes great determination, the will to do the work, and then the wisdom to keep refining, keep tinkering, keep perfecting. The same determination is being realized in America today. I see it in the scientists who are transforming the future. I see it in the parents who are nurturing generations to come, in the innovators and the educators, in everyone, everywhere, who is building a better life for themselves, their families, and their communities. This, too, is American aspiration. This is what President Joe Biden has called upon us to summon now. The courage to see beyond crisis, to do what is hard, to do what is good, to unite, to believe in ourselves, believe in our country, believe in what we can do together. Thank you, and may God bless America.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk About Race. I like to end the show by saying every day and in every way, we hope you agitate for social change. Thank you for listening.
For more information on Let's Talk About Race, visit us on social media. We're on Facebook at Let's Talk Race 1, or check us out on Instagram at LTAR Show,
or www.letstalkrace.net.
The following program has been produced by Grassroot News Northwest.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was